event in our service today. Because it's the youth service, and at Easter camp we had this big, we had this thing called Big Top. Big Top was our meeting point where we worshipped, did sung worship, and also got to hear from our speakers. With this, we often sit with. All the time we sit with our youth group. So to imitate this experience, we're going to ask you guys to go sit with your life groups. So you guys might have noticed that there are some papers lying around with some names. These are your like mascots. So we're going to ask you guys to go shuffle around, be a little bit different. So we invite you to go do that if you guys feel comfortable doing that. So we'll give you guys a few minutes and then we'll come back. Oh, the map, sorry. Here's the map in case you don't know where that is. If your life group is not there, like for example, you're a young adult, I'm sure your young adults are capable. Young adults, one southern side. Newcomers, if you're you're not in a life group yet, feel free to go jump into the few back rows. I think Andrew Button's holding a very nice sign. He's doing a great mascot. If you guys haven't found your life groups, that's all good. Or we can just sit down where you are, or preferably on a chair. Thank you guys for doing that. As a part of the reason why we're doing this is because at Big Top, this is like the chance of when, if you want to respond, you can actually see who in your youth group is responding and how we can follow up with that as after Easter camp, because the journey doesn't stop at just Easter camp. So
we're going to pray Psalm 19 over Laura as she speaks. Okay. Let the words of her mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be pleasing to you, O Lord, our rock and our Redeemer. Amen.
How good. Oh, I'm excited about today. We are talking about wholehearted celebration. For me, as a native English speaker, one of the perks of moving to New Zealand after living in Germany for 10 years was a return to hearing my mother tongue spoken in public language, like public spaces. I quickly discovered a few differences, though. Week one, I learned that we fed kids supper at the end of youth group, and my American brain was blown away that we were gonna feed 60 kids a full meal at 9 p.m. I then discovered that we just feed them supper, which here means a reasonable snack. I thought I was pretty well adjusted after a couple of months, but then I was at youth group a couple months in and heard murmurs around of what supper was one night, and youth and leaders were getting increasingly excited, and I was getting increasingly disgusted with the ever-mounting hype when, again, in my American brain, I was picturing us eating something like this, warmed-up potato chips, because everyone said we were having hot chips, and I didn't know what that was. The more immersed in New Zealand culture I become, the less frequently these embarrassing confusions happen, but I still have to do the mahi to make sense of things that are different from what I grew up with. And I feel like that's what reading Chronicles can be like. The history books in the Bible are so loaded with these references that are based in the ancient Jewish culture that even when we translate them from Hebrew into English, we still find words that are used in a way that isn't our norm. Or there's weird habits that don't make sense because we're missing the cultural significance, and we've got a bit of mahi to do to make it make sense. And today's passage is like that. It's dealing with some fancy furniture and some festival traditions that seem bland or weird if you don't know the cultural relevance of them. So with that in mind, I'm going to stop at a couple points in our reading to explain a few of the details for those of us who didn't grow up in ancient Near Eastern Israel. But what I don't want to do is get so caught up in the details that we miss the point of this passage, which is a big celebration of God's faithfulness to follow through on his promises and party with us. So far, our Wholehearted series has been excerpts leading up to this dedication of the temple that we're about to get to. And God promised David that this stuff would happen, and David has made preparations, and his son Solomon is seeing that through. So with that context, let's start reading in 2 Chronicles chapter 5, beginning at verse 2, if you want to follow along. Then Solomon summoned to Jerusalem the elders of Israel, all the heads of the tribes and the chiefs of the Israelite families, to bring up the Ark of the Lord's Covenant from Zion, the city of David. And we're just one sentence in, and it's already pretty loaded with cultural stuff. Solomon is bringing everyone, and I mean everyone important, to go get this box. This is the most special box in the whole Bible. And if you don't know the history of the Ark of the Covenant, we're already off to a pretty weird start. But what this is a special box made back in the time of Moses to hold significant items relevant to the relationship between God and his people. And it might have looked something like this. This is a replica based on description that we have from the Bible. So through the history of this nation of Israel, this box was representative of where God's presence would sit in the most holy place of the tent or tabernacle that Moses built, or this temple that we're talking about today. And this is the place where the Israelites would come and worship God, and the ark was representative of God sitting in this place. They also sometimes, the Israelites, would bring this ark into battle, and there's this particularly epic story that I love where some enemies steal the ark and they put it in front of the idol of their god, and then the false god statue falls on its face in front of God's box. And so it's a big deal. This ark represents a lot. They've seen God's power associated with it and his presence, and it's a big deal to move it to this special temple that was built to house it. So next verse here. And all the Israelites came together to the king at the time of the festival in the seventh month. Now again, I am not all familiar with all of the holidays in New Zealand, and I'm learning a few of them. You may not be familiar with all the holidays in the ancient Jewish calendar, but the seventh month is a pretty special month for them because there's actually three festivals that happen. It's like their most holy party time, and they cover like the Jewish New Year, a day of atonement and sacrifice, and then a whole week of living in shelters outside that would help them to remember the traveling in the wilderness during the time of Moses. So what's important to know here, what we're reading in this story, is that this story is happening in this cycle of celebration time, which connects to our big idea that God shows up to celebrate when with his people when they celebrate. So when all the elders of Israel had arrived, the Levites took up the ark, and they brought up the ark and the tent of meeting and all the sacred furnishings in it. The Levitical priests carried them up. And this one is a bit confusing here too, because the tent of meeting is sometimes called the tabernacle or holy tent or whatever, depending on your translation. And when the Israelites wandered in the desert, that was where the ark was kept with some other special furniture. And That's what some of that stuff might have looked like. But it was used by the priests for special worship of God on purpose, and it was designed with intentionality. And in David's reign, the ark was moved to this place where they're gathering now in our story. And the tent had this different name and was maybe left in a different place than another tent and all these things. But what's happening now is everything is coming back to Jerusalem. They're now carrying it in this big procession, and they have these special poles to carry the tent. So it looked something like this with priests that would carry it. I'm also kind of fond of this coloring in representation of the ark because it includes the trumpeters in front. We're going to get to them in a couple verses. But for now, we'll go back to our text. And King Solomon and the entire assembly of Israel had gathered about him, were before the ark, sacrificing so many sheep and cattle that they could not be recorded or counted. Which we know is a lot, because literally one chapter ago, they listed off sacrificing 1,000 animals. And in about two chapters' time, when we're in the middle of Solomon's dedication ceremony for the temple, it says he sacrifices 22,000 cattle and 120,000 sheep and goats. So this is beyond that counting. Then it says, the priest then brought the ark of the Lord's covenant to its place in the inner sanctuary of the temple, the most holy place, and put it beneath the wings of the cherubim. The cherubim spread their wings over the place of the ark and covered the ark and its carrying poles. Now, cherubim is a Hebrew word that we just drop into our Bibles without even bothering to translate it. A cherub is a class of warrior angels, and cherubim is just the plural of that word in Hebrew. So those are the angels that are depicted in the top and different representations. Sometimes they'll look bigger or a little bit different because cherub have descriptions in the Bible that are kind of weird, to be honest. You might be thinking of a Renaissance misrepresentation of what a cherub is. But I think the Byzantines and the Russian Orthodox mosaics do the best with capturing the fierce, four-faced, multi-winged, multi-eyed beings that the Bible describes. But the point is that we get this idea that the cherubim on the ark, these are God's guards sitting next to this space, sitting at the mercy seat is what it's sometimes called, and that they are in this place that God's presence comes to sit on his throne in this ark box setting. So throughout the Bible, there's mentions of God enthroned between the cherubim, and it's talking about these guys sculpted above the ark in this physical representation on earth. It's a super special box. And it's so special, it can't be touched by people, and it has to be carried by designated people with those poles so they don't touch it, like we saw in that other picture. And you can read in 1 Chronicles 13 about how they learned that lesson about making sure you used poles and didn't touch the box. But this isn't, again, making sure we have the clarity. This isn't like these little precious moments figurines on top of a jewelry box situation. This is a big deal. And it says that the poles were apparently much longer than the depiction that we have, because in the verse, if we actually keep reading, these poles were so long that their ends extending from the ark could be seen from in front of the inner sanctuary, but not from outside the holy place, and they're still there today. There was nothing in the ark except the two tablets that Moses had placed in it at Horeb, where the Lord made a covenant with the Israelites after they came out of Egypt. So just a couple more notes here on our culture and context before we get to our main idea, because some of this wording is weird. And the author of Chronicles knew what they were doing. When it says the poles are still there to this day, this book was written centuries after the dedication of the temple, and a whole lot of exile and destruction had happened in that interim. So this phrase is likely just like an idiom for the poles just stayed there. And another kind of phrase that this author is using on purpose here to focus our attention is to say that there was nothing in the ark except these two tablets. Now, the writer would have known that the Ark of the Covenant was described as holding different things from the people's relationship to God. But what this author is doing is saying this covenant, this is the center point, what we're talking about. The box is important, and what's in the box is important. Because covenant is like a special promise, and that gets us to our big idea. The Lord made a covenant with the people of Israel, a particular binding contract, a promise, that's being fulfilled in part in this moment. It's a huge celebration because God has come through on his promise to his people to be with them and to make Jerusalem his chosen home among his chosen people of Israel. And this is worth celebrating. As promised, God shows up to celebrate when his people celebrate. It's almost too simple. Can God really care that much about celebration? Yeah, he does. It's literally baked into the Hebrew calendar. It's purposefully part of their life. They have these massive festivals where they're obligated to party, and every 7 years, it's like a super amplified celebration during the year of Jubilee. And this care for celebration is something that God carries through into the new covenant with instructions to Christians. We're told to rejoice in the Lord always. Celebration is part of our Christian life as well. So circling back to all of those uncountable sacrifices, Solomon is leading the charge with all of the leaders of Israel. And this is a corporate project to sacrifice and celebrate. And next, we read that it's all in on the musical worship element. We have rostered musicians each week, just like they did in temple worship at the time. But this says that everyone showed up for this event. Could you imagine if we packed our whole worship band up on the stage for one event? We have so many people. But that's what's going on here. Starting at verse 11, it says, "The priests then withdrew from the holy place. All the priests who were there had consecrated themselves regardless of their divisions. All the Levites who were musicians, Asaph, Heman, Jeduthun, and their sons and relatives stood on the east side of the altar, dressed in fine linen and playing cymbals, harps, and lyres. They were accompanied by 120 priests sounding trumpets. The trumpeters and musicians joined in unison to give praise and thanks to the Lord. Accompanied by trumpets, cymbals, and other instruments, the singers raised their voices to praise the Lord and sang, 'He is good, his love endures forever.'" And this is the exciting part. God shows up. "Then the temple of the Lord was filled with the cloud, and the priests could not perform their service because of the cloud, for the glory of the Lord filled the temple of God." Through the story of Israel, there are loads of places where the physical presence of the Lord is represented with a thick cloud. Have you ever been in a place that's just thick with God's presence? I've had a couple of those experiences in my life. They're so precious when you're in a space that you just know. There's no other words. It's thick with God's presence. It sometimes happens in the big top at Easter camp. But I've also felt it sitting on a summer day in Germany praying at a picnic table with a couple of other people. It's not about the place. It's about the presence. Something changes in this moment when the whole congregation lifts up their voices and they lift up their music and make this sound to God. God comes down and he settles among them. And it's special. And I'll note here that while it's musicians listed and it's as the rostered all in, it's signifying this corporate worship experience. And it gives everyone a participatory role. And that's so relevant to us. This service today is rostered with youth, giving some adults a week off. But there's a couple hundred of you here who still have a place in corporate worship today. You can be a part of singing songs together in this service, and you can join the greeting and coffee and song teams or other service roles in other weeks too. But this one day, where everyone has something to offer. It reminded me of the one day a year that our church has a service role for every member of the congregation. So if you haven't been around RCC for long, every year for Mark Wells' birthday weekend, we change up what church looks like. And it's not because of Mark. But every year, we put on the biggest Jesus celebration block party, and we shut down the street to see if we can outdo ourselves in generosity in Jesus' name to our neighborhood. And it's so cool. And it's just a little sparkle of what this party of parties, the return of the ark, is all about. And God is excited about it too. God is excited about the corporate celebration of his name. God shows up. There's a physical representation of his presence in this place when the people are obedient to bring the ark to the temple and offer these generous sacrifices. People have met Jesus at the street party, and God is excited about this kind of celebration. And we know it's consistent with his character. And Solomon highlights that in the beginning of his dedication prayer that we're going to wrap up with here, he's bringing attention to this when he says, Solomon said, "The Lord has said that he would dwell in a dark cloud. I have built a magnificent temple for you, a place for you to dwell forever." While the whole assembly of Israel was standing there, the king turned around and blessed them, and he said, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who with his hands has fulfilled what he promised with his mouth to my father David. For he said, 'Since the day I brought my people out of Egypt, I've not chosen a city in any tribe of Israel to have a temple built so that my name might be there, nor have I chosen anyone to be ruler over my people Israel. But now I have chosen Jerusalem for my name to be there, and I have chosen David to rule my people Israel.'" My father David had it in his heart to build a temple for the name of the Lord, the God of Israel. But the Lord said to my father David, "You did well to have it in your heart to build a temple for my name. Nevertheless, you are not the one to build the temple, but your son, your own flesh and blood, he is the one who will build the temple for my name. The Lord has kept the promise he made. I've succeeded David, my father, and now I sit on the throne of Israel, just as the Lord promised. And I've built the temple for the name of the Lord, the God of Israel. There I have placed the ark, in which is the covenant of the Lord that he made with the people Israel." God comes through on his promises. That's why I think it matters that this big idea is phrased as promised. God shows up to celebrate when his people celebrate. God wants to be here. God gives us a reason to celebrate. He wants us to celebrate and to celebrate wholeheartedly. For this last point, I'm mostly just going to borrow language from Richard Foster, who wrote what I think is one of the greatest books on spiritual formation of the modern era. His book is called Celebration of Discipline, and he has 12 different practices or disciplines that help a Jesus follower grow in maturity, and they fall into different categories, three categories with four each, and there's inward, outward, and corporate disciplines, and the last of his corporate disciplines, the final chapter of his book, is on celebration. Celebration itself is a discipline, according to Richard Foster. And he says it's super, super important. And he also distinguishes that this is not just plastering on a smile in terrible circumstances. I recognize that there are times that we go through things that are really hard. And celebration is not about pretending that's not happening or saying it doesn't exist. But rather, God's desire is to transform the misery, not to bypass it. And perhaps more significantly, what Richard Foster says is that in the spiritual life, only one thing will produce genuine joy, and that's obedience. He says, "Joy is found in obedience, When the power that is in Jesus reaches into our work and play and redeems them, there will be joy where once there was mourning. To overlook this is to miss the meaning of the incarnation. Now, here's where I'm going to start to get excited. Actually, let me rephrase that. Here is where I'm going to struggle to contain my excitement. When Solomon starts this party in the temple, God's physical presence takes up space, centered on the mercy seat above the ark, but is so thick in the rooms around it, it's surrounding the people. And this same God who, as promised, showed up for this important celebration of the ark in the temple, this same God loved us so much, he sent us Jesus. The Gospel of John tells us that the Word became flesh, and the Greek word that he uses to say became flesh is this word for tabernacled, referencing that special tent that was the forerunner of the temple, the first house of the Ark of the Covenant where God's presence dwelled. And this is where I think that words are cool and details matter, because Jesus put on human skin and moved into the neighborhood, as the Message translation says. And he did that so we could be with him, to be closer to his presence, to keep the party going. He made a way for us to be with him because we live in this broken world, and God said, I want to offer a better way. You can take this invitation to celebrate. Invitation to obedience and following Jesus. It's a better way. Now, so much of Western Christianity has, I think, an overemphasis on the me and Jesus relationship and the private connection. And that is a thing, but it's not the whole thing of the life of a Jesus follower. Theologian Paul Little says there's no such thing as a lone wolf Christian. And the picture in 2 Chronicles that we have is of a whole nation coming together to celebrate the promises of God and enjoy his presence in community. And one of the things I love about the advertising for Southern Easter Camp is that big picture of the church. You'll notice in the bottom right corner, it says the youth of the South Island coming together. That's their tagline in every promo that they have. And that's just one example that we have that's a youth-based one of a bigger picture of the wider church coming together. Another one that I love is the Open Heaven event that happens annually. In different cities around New Zealand, thousands of people come together to gather and celebrate Jesus and pray for our city and our nation. But it's not super practical or sustainable to have those national events every single week. In fact, over the course of Easter camp, I work an equivalent to over 5 weeks worth of my contracted hours for my RCC role. So I would literally die if we did that every week. But every year, I love it. I look forward to it. And then I hibernate for 2 weeks after. But then I go back to my life group and I have stories of celebrations. I get to tell them this year, 6 people made a first-time decision to follow Jesus. 4 youth have asked to get baptized in a couple weeks' time. These are exciting things, and then we return into this rhythm of our regular youth programming during term time. And I have this annual rhythm, and my life is still centered in these non-Easter camp weeks, is still centered around celebrating Jesus with these different pockets of corporate hype. Speaking of corporate hype, do you know what stall you'll volunteer at during the street party in November? That's still 6 months away. But in the meantime, I encourage you, you still have a reason to celebrate with the things that are going on in your life. And so because of that, I challenge you to commit to some kind of community, like a life group, a gathering, a fellowship of people that you know, so then when we do have these corporate celebration times, you know who you're celebrating with. We've had you move to sit in these life groups, and that's great for those you can see who's around you to recognize who you can celebrate with. And I recognize that there are other touch points of regular community that we didn't label. There's people you're not sitting next to that you still are close to. I also recognize that if you're newer or you've not yet found a group that fits in for you, we strategically placed you where you can view all the other groups and have a look around and see, is there somebody I could talk to about joining in with their community in this coming week? We also have Andrew Button strategically placed so that if you want to talk to him, he's got his hand up, he will point you out to someone to do that as well. But we want to do this as an invitation. There is space for you somewhere. You can be a part of the celebration. And knowing that there's more touch points than these, I also invite you to hang around after the service and buy your baked goods and have a conversation with someone about what intentional community that they are part of. This is an invitation. And we're gonna move into one last song for some corporate celebrating. And as the band comes back on the stage, I want you to know God is going to show up to celebrate here. So I offer you one last invitation. Will you celebrate too?
Yesterday.